Okay, good morning, guys, ladies. Nice that so many of you came up this morning. We want to talk a little bit about how we think we can help you making entitlements in AD understandable to the business. We think it's an important issue. I'm going to quickly go through the agenda. So what we'll be doing, giving a short overview on how we think that the problem looks like. So what is the problem that we are aiming to solve? I'm going to be talking about security groups and roles. So a large part of this presentation will be about role-based access control and how we implemented that in Forefront Identity Manager 20-ton R2. How many of you are familiar with role-based access control concepts? Okay, lots of hands, that's great. For those of you who are not familiar, I'm going to quickly go through the concepts so that we can all be on the same level when we continue and see how we implemented it. And I'm going to be showing a couple of experiences that you could have with that. So we'll be looking at role mining, which is basically how do you define roles and how do you get content into those roles. And we'll be looking at attestation, which is a process where you can enable the management in your company to verify that people have the correct access rights. And we will be looking at self-service, which is a means for managers or employees to request for roles and have those approved. And then we'll be looking at how you could do a process to actually onboard this in your company. If there are any questions, we'll have time for questions at the end of the presentations. And I'll be around here for other questions if you need me. Could also do more in-depth demos if you like. We've got a demo system downstairs. So my name is Rob Jong. I'm a program manager in the Active Directory team, and my group is doing Behold. I previously worked as a lead architect for Behold Company. Some of you may know me in that position. Well, it's a big change working for Microsoft now, but it's great to have the opportunity to actually work with this product, with this organization, and with all these customers. I did a lot of implementations for role-based access control software products with larger, medium-sized companies, and we took all that experience and tried to focus on that experience while building this software and implementing it with customers. So let's talk a little bit about the problem. Security groups, those are the representation of entitlements that customers have, and we think that they're out of control. And I think many of you, I already talked to a lot of people here, they share that opinion. There are some problems that we need to solve. One of the problems is an explosion of security groups. If you look at the situation within my own company, Microsoft, we have thousands and thousands or hundreds of thousands of security groups. And people are in many, many, many security groups. And the management of that process alone is a problem. The administrator usually knows what the security group means, what it does. But if you look at the naming of those groups, I'm not sure how that is in your company, but in our company, no one could tell from a name what it does. No one could. Also, we have a lack of control over the group lifecycle. So when can you actually start deleting a group? Will you keep it forever? Many people just keep these groups forever because they don't know who owns that group, why it was created, is it still being used, which resources does it actually give access to? We normally don't know that information. And as you don't know that information, you cannot just go ahead and delete groups. So the number of groups will just keep increasing. Then there's the question of how do people actually get group membership. So if you're a real small company, let's say a 20, 30 people company, then there's no problem. Because you know that you have just a small set of security groups. The administrator knows what they're doing. They know what they're for. The administrator also knows the people, and he knows what those people are doing. So he can determine, maybe together with the person or with his manager, which security groups a person should have. Also, in a smaller company, you will not have many changes to that. People change roles, but the administrator knows what to do. So it's not a real issue. It becomes an issue when the organization starts growing bigger and bigger and bigger. The number of security groups increases, the number of applications that you manage with those group groups keep increasing. And the administrator starts not knowing the people anymore. He doesn't know what John is doing over there. He knows he's maybe working in sales, but he doesn't know what he does. He doesn't know what sort of access rights he should give him. Also, the manager of John in the sales department, he doesn't know which security groups John should be in. He maybe knows some of them, but he needs to go talk to the administrator, talk to role owners, application owners, and find out what actually John should have. So those are basic problems, and those are the problems that we will be addressing in this session. And what we will be looking at is what sort of tooling has Microsoft added to Forefront Identity 22 R2 in order to help you solve these issues. A little bit of the context about FIM and Behold. In FIM originally, by the way, how many of you are actually using Forefront Identity Manager? Wow, a lot. Good. We'll be going quickly through a short overview of what Forefront Identity Manager does in this context. I'll be showing some slides later on. Just to give you a little bit of context, in Forefront Identity Manager, historically, you could add a user to a security group. And you could do that with a workflow, which was already a big improvement over just going into AD and doing it over there. So we added workflow functionality. We added an approval process. So it's no longer like the administrator would have to go in and do something, but people could request for a group membership, get it approved by someone, and then it's actually provisioned into your Active Directory. We could do it automatically. We could set up a policy which says, well, if John is in sales, then because he is in sales, he needs to automatically be added to this group. And you could do it for all your groups. In R2, which has been released 10 days ago, I think, we could also do historical reporting, so you could see which user got which new group membership, when did they get it, and who approved that, and what was the request, and what was the approval process. And so that's already in FIM R2. What we've added with Behold is a couple of new things. So first one is we do automatic assignments based upon user attributes. Well, that looks a lot like dynamic groups in FIM. But the difference is that we will not be assigning individual groups, but we will be assigning roles. And a role can contain many, many groups. We have a request and approval process. So you roll up multiple groups, even from multiple different applications or directories or forests, and put them all in one role. And then you can do a request for that role, and you can get an approval for the role. And we've added an attestation process. We'll be looking in much more detail in the attestation process later on. But what it comes down to is that we can now regularly ask the managers of departments to review the access rights that their users have and see if they are still correct. And if they're not correct, we can automatically correct them for them. If you want to use roles, then what you have to do is add content to those roles. Content being access rights, security groups, distribution groups, but it could also be access rights in other applications, like you could add SAP access rights. Now, if you want to start out doing that, then you probably have a situation where you already have many people assigned to those access rights. So we added a functionality where you can look at the existing access rights and try to match them to roles that we think people should have. We'll be looking at that process also. So, about roles. What is a role? We've been thinking about a generic definition of a role. It was difficult to come up with because many people have their own idea about what a role is. What we think it is a way to categorize user relationships to groups. Groups being groups in AD, groups or roles or access rights in other applications. And if you categorize all these relationships with users to groups, if you do that in a role, then you can do stuff like automatic provisioning. Automatic provisioning is one of the scenarios that we will be looking at more detail. And we think it gives a much better experience compared to groups. Because you can collect multiple groups in one role, you can then associate roles with organizational units, which could be projects or departments. By the way, if I'm talking about organizational units in this session, then I will be referring to organizational units as they exist in HR. So in your human resource application, you will have an organization structure tree. That's what I'm talking about. It's not the the organizational units as we know them in Active Directory. So you can associate roles with user attributes. You can say if a person has a certain job title, then I automatically want to assign a special role type, which is a job title role. And then the user should automatically get the contents of the role. You can do that for any attribute in the system. And you can give meaningful names to roles. You can give descriptions to roles. And doing that, you will, in fact, enable the management to take control over that process because they can see what a role means. And they could also go into the level of the groups that are associated with it, but very often people don't understand that level. So we want to bring it to a level where management can understand it themselves. And what you can do, you can track relationships with the between security groups. So, for instance, you could see like, hey, if a user has this specific job title, then he will always need to have these different groups. And you can track those relationships. You can also track the history of that. So you can see in a certain point of time, someone with a job title role of, let's say, sales manager, he needed to have certain group accesses, and we can trace back when he got that group access and who wanted that, who did that. Now, how do roles work? Roles have members, and members are the users which are linked to that role. So a user could get automatically linked to a role. A user sits in an organizational unit, a role is related to an organizational unit, and which means that the user will inherit that role. We could link them automatically through attribute values. User has a job title, we have a job title role, he gets the job title role belonging to his job title or to any other attributes that you want to use that for. You could also, as an administrator of the system, just go ahead and link a user directly to a role. You will not have any approvals, but at least you will have a audit track, audit trail logged for that action. So you could later find back who added this user to this role. Roles have content, and content could be an Active Directory group. We call all the content of a role, we call it a permission. You will see that later on in demos also. So a permission, it could be an Active Directory group. It could be an access right in another application. In fact, you could link any application that you can link to Forefront Identity Manager. You can use those groups in BL as well. Also important, a role can contain other roles. So you might have a situation where you have 7 different job titles, but they actually all do more or less the same thing. So you would create one role for the more generic stuff in that job title and link it to each of the job title roles, which means that you only have to maintain it at one place only. Roles can get inherited through the organizational structure. So you could, for instance, go ahead and make one role which is linked to your top-level organizational unit and just inherit it all through, which means that whatever access right is in that role, everyone in the company will get it. Or you could do that at a lower level, let's say at the sales division level, and only people in the sales division will get that access right. Whatever the result of those calculations are, in the end, it will be access rights which are linked to users. And that triggers a provisioning instruction. It triggers a provisioning instruction in Forefront Identity Manager to start linking the user to that specific access right in the target applications. So, quick recap of roles. We group access rights. AD groups for other applications. Roles can be created automatically based upon HR data. We'll be looking at much more detail on that process later on. You can create a role manually. You can just go ahead, go into the system and say, okay, I want to create role XYZ. roles are linked to users automatically based on what HR data, manually because you could do a self-service request for a role and then have that approved. And again, you could go into the Beholder portal and directly link a role to a user. And roles trigger provisioning into targets. And the targets could be AD or they could be other applications. Now let's talk about automatic provisioning. As we've seen, you can use roles to automatically get permissions linked to users. What it does is we have new employee data coming in from HR. So we have got an HR application somewhere and we get some information from those new employees into Behold. It's all flowing through FIM. We'll look at the data flows a little bit later on. Now what happens is as soon as a new employee comes in, then Behold starts by creating that employee in some role database and then linking it to the organizational unit, and then based upon the HR information, we will start adding all sorts of roles. So to start with, a user will get the department role for the organizational unit that he is in. He will get job title roles if you configured that. And all those roles will be added to a user. And then Behold starts calculating the group memberships which are in those roles. And then all the group memberships will be provisioned into AD through FIM 2010. And if you change any employee data, then what will happen is that Behold will go ahead and recalculate all that information, which means that if a user is moved from one department to another department and gets a different job title, then the old access rights will be removed from that user, the new access rights will be added. If there's any overlap, nothing will happen with the overlap. So if you have a permission that is both in your old and in your new job title, nothing will happen with that. So I'm going to do a really short demo on automatic provisioning. In fact, what I want to do is just look into the Behold system and show you how that actually looks in Behold, so how the data structure looks and how you can do that. We're not actually going to do automatic provisioning, just show you how the structure looks. In order to do that, I'm going to switch. Yes, it works. Great. So I just got a list here of organizational units. What you're looking at here is the Behold portal, which is the administrative interface. It's not the interface that end users will normally see, but the administrator will work with this. And we've got some menu options here on the left side of the screen, and this is actually the screen that I will be working with. I'm going to search for an organizational unit here, and let's say sales. I'll go ahead, and here we have a piece of my organizational structure, and it's got a couple of units below that. So let's see what we see here. We have, a root. Every organizational structure tree has a root. We've got the company, which is our demo company. It's got the business unit, insurance, and below that we've got home insurance. Below that we've got the sales department, and the sales department has a lot of sub-departments. So let's look at one of them. This is the way you navigate through the system. Just they're all hot links, so just click on them, and it will go ahead and get lower information. So here we've got Office Central West, which is the unit that we want to be working with today. And the Office Central West unit, to start with, it has a number of inherited roles. As I discussed before, a role will be inherited through the organizational unit structure if it is linked to an organizational unit. So what we see here is that this organizational unit, Office Central West, it already inherited, from sales, it inherited the membership role for sales, for home insurance, for the business unit, and for the whole company. So if I wanted to give all my users in all my company access to a certain resource, I would just go ahead and add that resource access right to the membership role for the company. But I can do that on any level. I can also stop the inheritance if I say, not below this level. The organizational unit of Central West also has one membership role itself, which is over here. So here we've got the membership role for Office Central West. Each organizational unit automatically gets his own membership role. And we have users. So let's look at the users. We've got a couple of users in this system. It's just a demo system. So these users came in from HR, and based upon their organizational unit information in HR, they are put in the model in this organizational unit. Let's just go and look at one of the users. So we've got user attributes. If you are free to define any attribute that you like. You can define them yourself, or you can derive them from HR or from any other source that you like. You could also derive information from Active Directory and flow it into Behold in order to be used for a role calculation. And I scroll a little bit down here. I can see this user has a job title, a sales clerk 2. Now, because the user has a job title, sales clerk 2, this means that he automatically also got the role job title, sales clerk 2. And we will see that over here. So GT-sales clerk 2 is the role that this user inherited because of the fact that she has this job title. If the job title changes, then the job title role will also change. And thereby, all the permissions linked to the job title role will change. If I click on the job title role, I can see what the contents are. There are 3 permissions in this job title. So I can open this tab, and then I can see, well, with this job title, you can have access to sales files, and that's a permission in Active Directory. Or you could have 2 SAP roles, which are linked to you. So sales clerk can create new sales orders and update existing sales orders. What you can also see in this screen is which users are actually also linked to this role. So you have a complete view on the other users which are using these roles. And these are the other users linking to this role. So this is basically how the Behold structure works with organizational units, with roles, with users, and with permissions. Now let's look at the automatic provisioning data flow, how this works. This is a picture which shows a forefront identity 22 synchronization, and we're using the FIM synchronization engine to do most of the work for us. This is a typical, it's normal data flow for FIM. So what you have here, you've got a source HR, human resource system, and we get some information from that system. We'll feed it in something that is called a management agent for the HR. It's flowing through the connector space into the metaverse, and then we can provision to Active Directory. So if you would just want to create new accounts in Active Directory, then this is the flow that you would use. It's pretty straightforward, I think. What we added is a management agent and a connector space for Behold as a component, which is added to this whole suite. And Behold will get employee information and HR information, OUs, from the source HR, and it will groups and accounts from Active Directory. So those are both imported into the metaverse. And then that information flows into Behold. Now, because it comes there, we can use the role model, and the role model will then start calculating group memberships. So the group memberships are now in Behold. We know which accounts should be linked to which AD group. It's flowing back through the MA, and finally it flows back into Active Directory as group memberships. So this is our basic data flow for automatic provisioning. So what it does is it can take care of your day zero provisioning, which means as soon as a new employee comes into HR, we will be able to already set up that employee with the access rights that he needs based upon the HR data. It will update all the access rights when any data in HR changes. So if a user gets a new job title or a new position, or maybe he is taking a long leave, or whatever information you have there that can drive the model, it will automatically recalculate the access rights based upon that information. It's fully automated. There's no interaction, which means you just set it up once, and from that moment on, all the EHR changes will automatically trigger provisioning or deprovisioning in the target systems. And it typically will take care of 40 to 60% of the provisioning needs. If you look at all the user access changes that you are doing, you can derive more or less 40 to 60% of those from what is happening in HR. And so we can automate that part already. Now, question is, how do I define roles and how do I mine? How do I get the content for those roles? So where do roles come from? What we do, we have two types of roles. We've got automatic roles, and automatic roles are roles which are created automatically for instance, each organizational unit. So if there's a new organizational unit in your structure, there will automatically be a new membership role in Behold for that organizational unit. If there's if you configure an attribute to drive an attribute type role, like for instance a job title, then for each new value that we have for that attribute, we will automatically create an attribute role. For each user, we create a role. We create a personal role. Now, personal roles are a little bit special because normally you would not want to use those. In an ideal world, for every employee in the company, you should be able to say why he has certain access rights. And that business reason for driving the access right could be linked to a role type. And then you could start automating that. However, in real world, we don't always know why people have certain access rights. Very often people have access rights for historical reasons, so they already have a lot of access rights. We need to start somewhere. So what we do is we create a personal role for each employee, and as long as we haven't moved access rights to any of the other role types, they will remain in the personal role. That also enables you to take care of emergencies. Like, there can always be a situation where someone just needs to have access and he needs to have it now. And instead of going to your AD and adding the user to the group, which is an action which will be forgotten immediately because we don't remember the business reason, you can do it in Behold, add the permission to the personal role, and record who did it and why it was done. So that's why we're using personal roles. You can also use manual roles. Manual roles are roles which you create freely. You can just create a role, whatever you like. And you can assign them manually, or you can have a self-service request being made for that role. And then you can link an approval workflow to that. So how do we get content in those roles? How are we going to know which access right, which AD group we want to link to the role? First of all, you can use statistics. And we have a statistic analysis process, which we call model generator. And we'll be looking at that later on, which helps you start to find content for the roles. There are a couple of different role types that we can use. And we'll be looking at the role types later on. And we have a normally you would not start designing and verifying your roles that you just generated in a production environment. You first would like to verify the contents and the effect of that contents in a test environment. So how can you do that? We've got a solution for that as well. Talking about role types, we use four different role types, which are automatic, and you can go ahead and create any other role type yourself if you want to. First of all, there's the membership role. So just to recapitulate, membership roles are inherited by users through the organizational units. So whatever organizational unit you are linked in, you automatically will inherit that membership role. And the membership roles are inherited throughout the organizational unit tree. We've got attribute role. Each attribute that a user has can be configured to drive an attribute role. So if you say, I don't want to use job title, but I want to use position, or I want to use a combination of job title and department, or whatever combination you want to make there, you can use that attribute, configure it, and it will start driving attribute roles. And attribute roles are created automatically, and they will be linked to a user if the attribute value matches. Optional roles. If you do a role analysis, as we will be doing shortly, then what you will see is that there are some access rights, a specific AD group, which is available for part of your users. So some of the users in an organizational unit will have that access right, certainly not all of them. but let's say 30, 40, 50%. If that is the case, then you could imagine that another new user in that organizational unit may want to have that access right, but we cannot assign it automatically. So what we do is we create an optional role which contains that access right, and we link it to the organizational unit so that you can make a request for it. So additional access rights can be requested through the self-service portal, and we will look into that later on. And we will generate that based upon statistics again. And then finally, if we find that no permission satisfies any of the conditions to become part of one of the other role types, we will just put it in the personal role of the user. So every user has a personal role, and we can always put stuff there. So how do the statistics work? What we will do, we will link permissions, existing access rights that users have. We will look at those access rights, and then if a large amount of users, and you can determine how big that amount must be, if a large percentage of those users in the same organizational unit, for instance, share the same access right, then you could say, okay, then it is very likely that the next user coming into that access right in that organizational unit will also need that access right, and therefore we will stick it into the membership role of that organizational unit. And we do the same thing for the other role types. And you can set several different parameters which will drive the statistical process. So, for instance, you could say if more than 95% of the users in a certain job title share a same access right, a permission, then it is likely that the next guy in that job title will also need that permission, so I will stick the permission in the job title role. So this is what model generator does for you. You can say if all users in a department share the same access right, then that access right will become part of our membership role. If more than 30% of the users in a department share a certain permission, then create an optional role for that access right. And what we can do is we can analyze the role model once it is completed. We've got a real nice analysis tool which sits on top of that, where you can just go ahead and put in all sorts of queries. And you can modify the role model after you've completed it. You can repeat the whole role mining process with different parameters. And finally, you can export the role model and import it into your production environment. So you just create a file in your test environment, and when you're satisfied, you just create an XML file, which you can then import into your production environment. Since you want to be doing this offline, you will probably not have access to the complete role environment and the existing access rights. So what we've added is a functionality where you can import Excel or CSV files which contain the access rights and import those in Behold. So I'm just going to show you a couple of sample input files so that we get a little bit of an idea of what we're talking about. I've got three input files here. I've got an input file which contains organizational unit data, employees, and one for group memberships. So this is the organization spreadsheet. As you can see, it's pretty straightforward. It has, well, an OU key which we use to link organizational units together, a description. Description must always be there. If you know the manager, then there's a column which contains the manager's names. And these will be later on used for approvals. And we've got the parent OU key, which means that the business unit finance is under the company. So this is the organizational spreadsheet. And just try to dump this from your HR system. It's a very simple format. If you want to add more attributes in your model, then you can do that by just adding additional columns. It's pretty straightforward. Same thing is true for employee data. So I've got an example here where I've got employees. Employees always need to have an employee ID. In my demo here, I've just taken the name. It more likely will be something like an employee number. I've got an employee type, which is just an attribute that I can use for all sorts of actions. A description, which is where we know the user by. I've got a column with job titles. And this is just an attribute column. So we will be using the job title in our example here, but you can add whatever attribute columns you want. And as soon as you use an attribute column, then the system will automatically start generating the optional roles or the membership roles for that job title. Email, stuff like that. It's a pretty straightforward file that we need. And then group memberships. These typically come from Active Directory. So we've got, again, a column with wherever we can recognize the employee. We're using employee ID over here. The account name. And then for each application that you want to start managing, the permissions that that user is linked to. Again, fairly straightforward. So if you have these three files, then we can already do a lot of stuff. So how does the data flow look? We'll take Excel or CSV files from Active Directory. We want to have AD accounts, we want to have the groups, and we want to have the group memberships, as we've seen it in the spreadsheet before. And from HR, we will have the employee information, the manager information, and the organizational unit information. Then we'll just stick that in model generator, and then we will start a generation process based upon the parameters that we entered. So we will start doing a process which we call role mining. It will just go ahead first and check for all the access rights which qualify, in which membership role it should put those access rights, so we can generate content for the membership roles. We'll do the same thing for the attribute roles that we configured. And then whatever is left there, if it qualifies for an optional role, we will create optional roles. And then finally, the content is put in personal roles. If we cannot do anything else, then it will be in personal roles. So this is how the data flow for role mining works. Now, how does the result of that look? I'm going back to my core user interface. So this is just a sample of a model that I generated. So we have a membership role for manufacturing. That's a new membership role which was created for the organizational unit manufacturing. And what you see there is a number of permissions. We've got four permissions which qualify for this role. So these permissions are linked to the role based upon the percentage of users in that organizational unit that actually had those permissions. And then, of course, we've got the users that are linked to the role based upon the organizational unit membership. So this is an example of how a generated model in model generator looks like. And you can use these roles automatically. As soon as you've done this and you say, okay, export this to my production environment, then the next person that enters the manufacturing organizational unit will automatically inherit these four permissions. So, role mining. Roles are used to assign permissions to users. We know that. Permissions can be security groups or access rights and other applications. You can use different types of roles. We can maintain most roles automatically based upon information that we get from HR. We can link most roles automatically based upon that information also. And we can generate the content of those roles based upon existing access rights. So that's what role mining is about. Now look at attestation. We now have a situation where we have access rights in our roles. We have assigned those roles to people based upon their attributes and values in HR. And we still have a lot of stuff in personal roles. Now, you want to review those personal roles, I think. Also, what you would probably want to do is maybe even review those personal roles before you start doing the whole role mining exercise. So just look at all the existing access rights of all the people and ask their managers, is this still okay? Can we clean this up or not? So that's what we're doing with attestation. Attestation, according to the dictionary, is to affirm to be correct, to be true, to be genuine. So we are going to look if the access rights of our users are still correct. And the only person that can determine if this is true is the person responsible for those access rights, and that's normally the line manager. We call the person doing that, by the way, we call that the steward. So the steward not necessarily has to be the line manager. We could also use someone else who does that attestation process within a department for the line manager. what happens is we create something which we call an attestation campaign. A campaign is where we say we want to look at these applications and we want to look at these departments, and then we want to automatically create attestation requests for the managers that are in those departments and have them attest to the fact that these people should actually be in those applications. What the attestation process itself does is it collects information which the stewards are entering. It monitors the progress, so it's looking like how far are we in this process. We send out a message to a manager saying, can you please tell me what if these access rights are correct? Well, which percentage of those access rights did he already cover? We can handle exceptions. There could be exceptions like we think that John is the manager of the sales department. However, John already left, so we cannot use John to do that. What you can do is you will get an exception because John didn't respond to the request, and you can then go ahead and change the steward of that organizational unit. You could also have exceptions like John is looking at the attestation screen and he sees a user, Mary, but he says, well, Mary is not here for a long time already. So I'm not going to attest to her access rights. So he just says, I don't know Mary. And then you will get an exception back saying, okay, we need to find out who is responsible for Mary right now. If the manager thinks that a certain access right should not be with a user, then he can just mark that on his sheet, and then we will automatically remove the denied exceptions from the target applications. So if the manager says, this guy, he used to be in that group and that was okay, but now he's into another group, he cannot have the right anymore, then you just mark that, and automatically the guy will be removed from that group in Active Directory. And of course you will have reports showing that you actually did the attestation process. So you can see for each user what was the last time that his access rights were attested. And you could use those reports to fulfill all sorts of requirements that you have to do for compliancy. Oops, again. So how does the attestation experience work? Before you start, you need to know who the stewards are. So who is going to attest for those access rights? Typically, that information could come from HR. And of course, you have to upload existing group memberships. You have to know which users are in which groups in order to drive this. Now, who does what? The administrator of the system will define a campaign. He will just say, okay, we're now going to look at this application and I want to know it for the sales department. Then the attestation module will send out requests. The stewards will get those requests and start filling out the forms. The attestation module will send them reminders to saying, hey, I sent you a request 2 weeks ago already. Go do something with it. And the administrator will monitor the progress. And finally, the attestation module will do automatic correction in the target applications. Now, looking at the data flow here, we've got information coming from HR again, which employee is in which department and who is managing. We get data flow saying which users are in which ID groups, because those are the basic things that we need to know. That information flows into Behold and into an attestation service. And the attestation service is talking to a web service. The information flows into the system. Finally, a new campaign is created by the administrator. As soon as the campaign is created, there will be emails sent out to the steward saying, can you please verify the access rights of these users? The steward clicks on a link, goes to a website, and fills out a form. That information then flows back into attestation, and finally corrections are sent back to Behold, and those then are deprovisioned in Active Directory. So that's our basic data flow for attestation. There are many options in attestation to manage that process so that it will work as you want. So for instance, you could say, I want to do all applications, or I want to do just one specific application. I want to do all organizational units, or just a part, just a tree, or just one. You can say, I want to do attestation based upon the actual group memberships, or you can say, now, to start out, I just want to know if people can have have an account in that application. So then it will only do attestation on account level. A couple of other options that you can use there to time it exactly to your requirements. That's the attestation data flow. So quick recap. Attestation ensures that users can only have those groups that they actually should have. And the person that we think is responsible for that is the steward. So he should be able to tell us which users should have access to the groups. The idea is to put the control back in the hands of the line manager. So he needs to be involved in that process. Because it's a role-based approach, who is the steward for an organizational unit is a role, and you can give that role to someone else. So you can delegate attestation tasks. The unwanted access rights are automatically removed from the target, so the results of the attestation campaign are enforced in your targets, and you have a monitoring tool which allows you to follow the progress of the whole attestation process. Attestation. Let's look at another part of this module, which is a self-service. What self-service does is it allows a user to request for a role. So he can say, I no longer want a specific role, or I want to have an additional role. This can be a line manager that does this for his own employees, or it could be an employee who does it for himself. As soon as a request is made, we are checking to see what sort of approval workflow should be linked to that role request for this specific user. And you can get approval from a line manager, if an employee requests. If the line manager requests themselves, we don't need line manager approval, obviously. By a role owner, so you could say who is the role owner and he needs to approve this access. Or if it's a role which contains high security permissions, then you could add also the security officer to approve. And once a role is approved, a user can be put automatically in multiple different security groups. So a role can contain many different security groups, so you make one request for all those security groups. The self-service allows a user to revoke a role for himself or request. He can delegate a role that he has himself to someone else. You can have the manager to request to revoke a role for a user that he is responsible for. And this is all happening in the workflows in FIM 22. And the experience is also integrated in the Forefront 22 user interface. So I'm just going to show you how that works over there. Let me see if I can switch it to this screen. Probably my VM now went to sleep and it will not wake up in time and we may get an error message. Don't laugh about it, it's normal. It's nothing to worry about. It also takes some time before it realizes that this should actually happen. So as you see, we've got here a normal Forefront Identity Manager portal screen. And we just added an option here, which is Behold Self-Service. And this option is available for all users that you have given that access right in Behold. It's just a permission that you add to a role. As soon as the screen comes up, which should happen any moment now, we can then start selecting the user where you want to make the request for. And in the setup over here, I'm logged in as the administrator, so I can make a request for any user. We could then select which roles are available for that user and make a request for that user. This is the error I was talking about. Next time it will be better. It's almost there now. Really? Trust me. Ha! You see, I told you it would work. So this is a screen which shows me, among other things, which applications I have in this system, so for which applications I can make requests. If I go to the Manage Staff tab, then it will show the employees that I have access to. Well, since I'm administrator, I will have access to all the employees, so I can just go ahead and pick an employee, or I can search for an employee. It's I can just scroll down the list and see who I want to do here. Let me go down a little bit and pick the user that I set up. So I'm going to just select the user here, and then I say select employee. Then it will now query the Beyond system to see which roles are already linked to this user. Can I revoke a certain role? Not all roles are revocable. For instance, if you are a member of an organizational unit, then you automatically get the membership role. And you should not remove that role because it's part of the structure there. But we could remove the job title role over here, Senior Accounts Payable Clerk. Or we can make a request for these roles which are available for that organizational unit. So I could say I want to make this user a member of the Accounts Payable Clerk job title role. I could type in a justification like just anything. I could could set a period. So I could say, well, we only need, this user only needs to have this role from, let's say, from tomorrow until the 18th. And I could say, okay, I want to receive a notification when this is approved. What you see over here is the line manager approver. There could be a role approver, but I didn't define any role approver for this role, so which means that the role approver step is being skipped. And there's a line manager. If there's more line managers, then you can select which line manager you want to approve this, or just keep it default, which means that all of the line managers will get the request. And I can now go ahead and just submit the request. So if I submit the request, then what will happen is Alka will get a message saying, hey, Kim Kerbo needs to be linked to this role because administrator says that it's necessary and these are the reasons and these are the parameters. And can you agree to that? And if she says yes, then the role is linked. So I'll do that. We will not be looking at the rest because that takes some time to process. So that is self-service. Quickly look at the self-service data flow. So what actually happened here in this process? It begins with the manager opens the self-service portal. Well, you've seen that. It takes a lot of work to do that in the demo, but in real life it's a lot easier. So he opens the self-service portal. And what happens is that the self-service portal will then send a request to Beyond saying, what can this manager actually request for? Now, since I was administrator, I can request for everything. But normally a manager can only request for roles which have been assigned to his organizational unit. If he's a manager of more than one organizational unit, then he can obviously get access to all those roles. Also, information comes back on which are the users which are being managed by this manager, because he can only make requests for these users. So we get a list back of available roles and employees. And, well, as you've seen, we're going through the process of selecting the user, selecting the role, and creating a request. And then that request becomes a workflow in FIM. So based upon what we've entered there, as soon as we push the request button, a workflow in FIM is triggered. And then what happens is FIM starts evaluating, like, who needs to get a message, an approval message. And it's a message like, can this user get this role, basically? Now, he says yes or no. Let's assume that he says yes, so it's okay. Then the role owner approves that request, and the approval of the request goes back into the self-service portal. And that finally means that the role is assigned to the user. By the way, if there are more than one approval step, so if, for instance, a line manager and a role owner needs to approve, then that process will be repeated until everyone has approved. As soon as one person does not approve, then the whole workflow is cancelled and the requester is informed, like, John didn't want this, so it's done. Finally, if the role is assigned to the user, then the groups which are in that role are linked to the account or accounts. You can make a request for just one user, but you can also make a request for several users in one time. You can also make a request for several roles in one time. So you can do that combined if you like. So the groups which were, the roles which are now linked to the users are calculated for group changes for the accounts. That information is flowing back, and finally it's flowing back into Active Directory or any other application that you linked here. I just put Active Directory there, but we could have any other application that you linked to FIMSYNC in order to do that. So that's the self-service data flow. Quick recap, so an end user or a manager can request to add a role or remove a role. You can do a temporary role assignment. You can have an approval process, and the approval process could be line manager needs to approve, or the role owner needs to approve, or the security officer needs to approve, or combinations of that. And as soon as the approval is there, then the contents of the role or roles are automatically provisioned to the user or users which got the role. So that's self-service. Coming back to our main title, like, how is this going to help us to manage security groups? We have a couple of observations that we did and a couple of things that you would really need to do. First, it's important to identify who are the owners of existing groups. And that's probably not always going to be easy. It's also not something that we can help you with very well, except for we can show you reports which say which groups are with which organizational units, so which group is used where. That might give you a pointer as to who the owner could be. We categorize sensitivity. Sensitivity is important because not all the roles are equally important. Sorry, not all the groups are equally important. If you have groups which are used by a small number of users only, or typically there are many groups that are used by just one user, you don't want to bother with those groups because it's not going to help you automate anything. You also don't want to work with groups which have a really high sensitivity. And the reason for that is that, let's say, for instance, we have a group like domain admin. I guess not many people have that group, domain admin, but there will be some. But you probably will have a really good process in place already to assign that group. Not just anyone can get domain admin. So we don't want to bother with those groups. What we want to concentrate upon is the large amount of groups which are not really special in sensitivity, but have a reasonable amount of group members. So it's interesting to just start categorizing there and say, okay, I'm going to concentrate my effort on that part. What we want to look at is the management of life cycles for groups. So who gets to create a group? What's the process for that? Can just anyone do that, or do we have a specific process for it in place? Whoever can create a group, it would be interesting to register who owns that group, finally. So who is the owner? It's probably not the administrator himself, because he does that because someone asked him. What is the purpose of the group? Why do we actually create this thing? Try to record that information. And if someone wants to have access, what is the approval process? What is the request process? Who can request access for a group? And who should approve that? What we'd like to do also is to enforce group memberships from the administration that you are running. And your administration is in Forefront Identity Manager. And so Forefront Identity Manager should be authoritative for group memberships. And in an ideal situation, it would mean that if someone wants to add a user to a group, this should always happen through the Forefront Identity Manager functionality. And it should never happen by someone just going in Active Directory and adding a user to a group. And in an ideal situation also, if someone still does it, you will get an alert and it will be removed. And if you do that, then you can really enforce that. So only assign group memberships through the system. The reason we want to do that is because we want to record why someone has a certain group membership and who approved it. That information is vital. Scoping the efforts, already talked a little bit about it. High business impact groups like a domain admin. There's probably already a process in place, don't worry about it. It's probably a complex process. It probably has high visibility, high risks. You don't want to clutter your efforts in your project by including all these high visibility risks in there. So just leave them outside for the time being. I don't care groups. There are many I don't care groups. I mean, within Microsoft, we have a huge amount of groups where no one would really care to manage those groups because they are, for instance, like I play guitar and there is a mailing list for guitar players. Now, there is no way someone is going to find my group membership for that group to be linked by anything which is business related. So it's just going to be part of my personal role and will be there forever. No one's going to link that to a job title group unless all other program managers at Microsoft will start to like guitar playing, which is not very likely because I know these guys. So those are I don't care groups. And there are many, many, many of these groups. You know, it's just don't care. Groups with no members, they're still there. We need to clean them up. But we're not in the process of cleaning up groups in AD. We're in the process of cleaning up group access rights. So if they have no members, it's not a problem right now. Groups that do not give access to any resources, it's also, yeah, these things happen. You know, it's we had a project a long time ago, and it gave access to a lot of file shares. And then the project ended, and the file shares were removed. The group is still there. Why bother? Because no access means no problem. So we don't want to bother about or be worried about all those groups. We just leave them out of our equation. So we've got medium importance groups, which are important, like large volume. There are many, many of these. There are many resources linked to them, so they give a lot of access. There are many group members. Many people can use these access rights. So if you focus on this, you will have a really high return on investment for the things that you're doing to manage that. So I'd say try focus on that part. And some steps that you could use to do this. First, get your data. We already talked a little bit about that. So which groups are there, which members do they have, and which resources do they access. If you have that information, you can already do a lot. Clean up your data, so get rid of your ghost accounts, accounts that do not link to any employee. Ghost groups, groups that have no members, or they do not give any access to any resources. Just, you can clean those up. We don't want to bother about them. And filter out the high business impact groups. So if they have access to sensitive data or access by sensitive employees, you all know who these are. Well, these people don't want to be bothered by all these processes, so keep your project simple and leave those all out for being. And then if you've got this data, you've filtered it out, then you can start uploading a basic role model. And we can do that using a model generator. It will generate the basic role model for you, and then you can use attestation to start cleaning up. When you've done the attestation process and the actual access rights of users are more or less okay, you may want to consider rerunning a model generator to see what changes this triggered and how that worked out in your role model. Finally, you start managing group membership by using automatic provisioning. You can probably get like 60%, 40 to 60% of the actual access requests managed through automatic provisioning. Then you can use self-service, which allows you to do the additional stuff. And then if there's still exceptions that you need to do, you can use manual assignments for that. So you can just go ahead and add a permission to a personal role of a user, and he will have the access. And afterwards, just do regular attestation campaigns to maintain the control that you've created. And many organizations that I know do attestation campaigns twice a year for important applications, once a year for less important applications. And that works really well. You keep getting the feedback, you also keep getting the involvement of your management, your line management, in the whole process. It works well. So back to our title, making AD entitlements understandable for the business. What we want to do is first generate a role model that's easy to understand for the business. The roles that we're creating here, like membership roles, job title roles, attribute roles. These are things that people can understand. A manager will know what the job title of his employee is, and he will know which additional job title roles he will need to do additional stuff. You can populate that role model using model generator, so it will give you a good start to start this whole process. Then what you can use is maintain the role model using attestation. Use automatic provisioning for the majority of your entitlements. Use self-service to allow the business to take responsibility, so it's no longer a user going to a system administrator to ask access to a role, to a group, but it is a line manager which makes a request which is approved by a role owner which automatically gives you the access. So it's the business which is taking care of it. It's no longer IT who needs to do it. And you can use personal roles to manage any exceptions that you have. And that, in whole, will give you a great opportunity to actually take control over the AD groups. Got some information about the product. You can get more on this link, Microsoft Build Suite. You can download it from MSDN. It's available for all customers that have software assurance and CALS. And there's no additional cost for this, so it's just a part of the FIM 22R2 offering. So I would say if you have more interest in looking at this, go ahead, download the bits, and see what you can do with it. Okay, these are the mandatory slides that we click through. Submit your evals online. Make them good. I need them. I need good evaluations. I need good scores and high points. You need to help me. So please help me. Do good scoring. That's where you can do it. Well, and through it. Thank you. If you have any questions, just come over here or whatever you want. See me downstairs later.